Hello and welcome back to Fan Critical. Yes, we're back. It's been a few weeks because we decided that we deserved a little mini break after the very, very sort of strenuous workload covering House of the Dragon for you, lovely listeners. It was, you know, two episodes a week, and it was a lot. All the research, all that jazz went into it, and we thought just have a little break. When we do a big show like this, it's nice to just step back, digest what we've just watched, and then come back with reviews of other things. And today, joining me for this very normal podcast covering a film is John. Hello, John.
Hello, Len. How are you?
Good? Yeah, good, mate. I feel well rested for podcasting because I was a little bit burnt out by the end of House of the Dragon. I mean, it was getting up at 4:30 a.m. every week, bearing in mind juggling now being a parent and actually having to travel into the office and stuff. It was a slog, a lovely slog, and I enjoyed every minute of it, but it was nice to get some weeks where I could just sleep. And now recording at such a lovely time for me.
Good.
Lovely. Yeah. You know, can really enjoy it. There's a little peek behind the curtain for you listeners of a little work, all the work that goes into the podcast. How are you, John?
I'm good, mate. Right? I'm good. You know, it's Saturday morning. I've had a coffee. Haven't had a shower yet.
Lovely. Ooh, stinky.
Probably hear, smelly. Very smelly. probably hear Ella screaming for no reason in the background. You might hear that from time to time. But to be honest, we're going to be talking about World War One, so probably prevalent to hear.
Lots of screaming.
Young screaming, to be honest. But no, I'm feeling good. I think this is going to be... I like to inject a little bit of humour, sarcasm, punnery into these podcasts. I think that's going to be a bit of a slog in this one, to be honest. But we'll give it a go, right?
We'll give it a go. You know, we'll try. Because, you know, if you haven't guessed from the title of the podcast that you've just clicked on, I've always wondered why we try to like keep it a secret sometimes, John. You know, we did that with the How the Fuck series.
Makes
like,
sense.
Oh, what film we talk about? They've clicked on the title. It's in the title. We're, of course, covering All Quiet on the Western Front. And I thought, depressing film, get John on board to talk about this, obviously.
Well, it was my idea to cover this film.
It actually was. It actually was your idea. Now, if you're thinking, I haven't heard of this film, that is because I actually was just surprised that this thing just dropped on Netflix. It's on Netflix right now. You can go watch it. Stop what you're doing if you haven't watched it. Go watch it, then come listen to this. I was surprised because I hadn't seen pretty much any marketing for this film, right? And when I started, just a little bit of hearsay, you mentioned it, John, and then I was like, okay, people are saying this is really good. And I love a war epic. Like, I'm a sucker for any of that. You know, Band of Brothers is probably one of my favorite TV series of all time. If not, it's in the top like three easily. It's fucking incredible, right? I love all historical, you know, modern history films right up my street. So when you mentioned this, I was like, fuck, okay, yeah, all right, let's go watch it. And I didn't realize that this was... because it was such a long time ago, obviously, before our time, John, that this is a remake of something from the 1930s, the original All Quiet on the Western Front, which actually won an Oscar, John, for Best Picture.
Yeah.
So have you seen the original, out of interest?
I haven't seen the original.
No, me neither. Me neither.
Which is bad, actually. So, I mean, we're both film students. And I think in terms of... so at the time, it was... like an amazing achievement, but I think if we watched it now, as far as I can garner from feedback, much like when you watch, like, you know, Cagney and things like that in the 20s, the 30s, and the 40s, the acting is fucking, it's terrible, isn't it? Like, it's so it's of that time,
craft.
But it's
that craft, that, the has melodrama come forward a long way.
Yeah. It's the there's a nuance in acting that people appreciate more. You know, De Niro at a bar in Goodfellas, saying nothing, just looking at the camera. You're like, wow, that is excellent, as opposed to someone giving some long-ranged dramatic speech. You know, it's just not real, is it? So I haven't seen the original, but I hear good things. Maybe I will after this. Maybe I will.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, this current remake, and this is a question for you, John. How did you watch this? Because I put it on last night, and obviously it's a German film, and I heard English. It was default set to English, right?
Right.
Like voice. So I was like, oh, that's interesting. They've done this, you know, sometimes these films will do this, like where they're actually German, but they're speaking English. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I watched like 5 minutes and I was like, this is fucking dubbed. I couldn't really tell. I was sitting there just going, oh my God. And then I was like, quickly get to the German version, the German version. And it was far better. I was like, oh my God, thank that. Luckily I didn't watch anymore. I hate dubbed films. I hate them. I just can't do it. So did you, I assume, watch the German subs?
No, I always...
English subs.
Yeah, I mean, watching German subs would be quite difficult. give it a go.
You speak
that
German,
would be very so... authentic. No, I absolutely... any foreign language film, I will never, ever watch the dub.
Yeah.
You know,
some anime is okay dubbed, some, and and Spirited Away, like films like Spirited Away, I think Ghibli's dubbing is fantastic. Obviously they get like Christian Bale and fucking Liam Neeson doing their, you know, the dubs, so you get this unbelievable actors. But
I know,
anyway,
but Pikachu just sounds weird when Bale's doing it. Pika!
Pika! Pika!
I don't
See?
Know where
you said
Pika.
We couldn't have humour.
So there you go. I knew we'd find some Pikachu voiced by Bale and Neeson banter in a World War One mellow drama. I mean, it's different with animated, isn't it? It doesn't really matter in that sense. Although, actually, and this is the fuck, honestly, some of the segues we go down, but. I mean, yesterday I watched...
Go on.
This is mental to say this as well. I needed a little bit of, let's say, light relief. And that's not masturbation, by the way. I'm talking about, like, you know. So I needed Ooh. Something light after this very depressing film. And I saw that Ash Ketchum was trending yesterday.
Yeah.
Have you heard about this?
I've heard about this, yeah.
So,
yeah. And do you know what? It filled my heart with joy. You can tell the listeners because
really
it actually made
it really
me
good. After
a diehard Pokemon fan happy.
After 25 years of trying to be the very best, he won the world championship. So there you go.
He is officially the best trainer in the world because not only did he win the world championship, he beat... This is like the meeting of all of the best world trainers and he finally won.
Yeah.
So
he's the lineal champion.
What a journey. Correct. He is the lineal champion. Yeah.
Yeah. And he did it with Pikachu.
That's a nice segue.
So people slagging Pikachu off, saying, you know, he's finished.
Beat Charizard.
Yeah.
It's classic.
So there you go.
Anyway.
But
fucking hell, how have we got onto this? back to reality and the harsh reality of World War One.
Yes.
Yeah. Where, and this film just at the moment is sitting on 92% on Rotten Tomatoes. I do like to bring that up with films because I think it's a good barometer of where the critical consensus is. It's 92 critic and 90% audience, which is quite good, obviously, very good. Obviously, we don't work on a percentage scale. We work on something that is the blueberry scale,
yes.
1 to 5, can be no halves. John, what did you think about All Quiet on the Western Front? What would you give it? And your overall thoughts, please.
Okay, so a little bit of... prefacing here. I don't like Rotten Tomatoes. I think the scoring is fairly weak, so it's like,
yeah,
you know, one rotten one fresh rating from a critic can be anywhere from like over 3 out of 5 to 5 out of 5. It's just, it's the same freshness. You don't get extra freshness. So that's why I think it's garbage. Metacritic is probably better for something like that. But on the other thing, it's like, so 8%. So let's say there's 300 critics. So 1% would be 3. 23, something like that,
fucking hell.
Okay, yeah. So let's just say out of 300 critics, let's say just under 30 think this is a bad film. Like, how? Honestly,
that is weird.
It's, you don't have to like go in there and go, yeah, bloody love war, this is going to be good. And then watch it and go, oh, this is really depressing, actually. It's not very good about war, is it? Oh, I don't like this film. You know, you don't have to go in there and go, oh, do you know what? I'm going to rate this a bad film because I wasn't laughing throughout. Like, but you must be able to watch this film and it must get you thinking about the, you know, the absolute, like, pointlessness and helplessness of...
Futility.
Yeah, futility of war. You know, and these conflicts that we find ourselves in. And, you know, at the same time that this film finished, I jumped on to BBC News. That's where I saw the Ash Ketchum news, by the way. But the leading story on BBC News is about the Ukraine capturing, you know, one of the key cities. And it's like, what's going on here? How can we, you know, as a human race, how can we sit and watch films like this, and of course there are many, many other texts that are not even necessarily just about World War One or World War Two, and go, yeah, do you know what? Let's just bomb each other and shoot each other, and let's be a pawn in the game of, you know, single digit percentage leaders. Yeah, you know, I know this quite deep for a podcast, but
very deep.
It's
Jesus.
Overly frustrating, and as someone that very few subjects at school really got me doing homework, history was one of them. It's the only thing I ever revised for, because that was the class where I wanted to score the highest. And all we did was cover World War One and World War Two and the civil rights movement and yada, yada, yada. A film like this, yes, when it ends, I'm like, that's extremely heavy. And in some ways, it's ruined my evening. But you still got to score it a 5 blue, haven't you? You've got to.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm not going to be rushing back in the same way, and not to be overly critical of 1917. You know, there is obviously aspects of that that are just so like far-fetched and silly. But I still love it because it's that little bit of like, you know, hope. In such grim situations, there's no way anyone's running across the battle lines to deliver a message like horizontally. That's never happening. little spoiler warning for 1917 there. Yeah. I also would have scored that a 5 bloob. But this is a 5 bloob in the way that, like a Schindler's List is, in that it's very depressing. It's thought-provoking. And you're not exactly going to be like, oh, can't wait to watch that again.
That's literally one of my notes here, John. I've written in my notes, I've written 5 bloobs as a spoiler warning for my score, but then I've also written, but would I watch it again? No.
I'm
my note underneath that.
It's one of those that, I mean, there must be like teachers, and again, I don't constantly go back to education, but I do think it's important. I made quite a ruthless comment whilst I was watching it. I watched this with my wife, and we were talking about the age of them when they're signing up. They're like 17 and stuff. And it's like, you know, I not too far from where I live. I won't say the exact details because I don't need any stalkers. You know, there was a fight between kids, and they were just letting off fireworks at one another. And I'm just like, what the fuck is wrong with these people, man? Like, just moron kids, you know, TikTok and all this shit. And it's like, we are so disconnected from where we were and how far we've come. And that sacrifice, and particularly watching this film yesterday on Armistice Remembrance Day. You know, it's pretty deep. It's pretty deep. We come from a generation where, you know, we're one removed parent wise from, you know, the Great War and World War II. So it's, I have to say, there are a number of times during the film where I was like, God, this is, you know, quite impactful. It does get you thinking. And obviously a few hours pass, I'm sitting there gorging on jelly beans, watching fucking South Park or something. but, you know, I will, I do want to go and read the novel, I must say. And one thing I will end with, because I realise it'll be going on for a while. It's nice to see a film from the German perspective.
That's what I've written as well, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. The 1930 film, the TV series that was made, or the TV movie that was made in the 70s, were both English-American productions.
Yeah.
I think the TV film was an English-German production, but this is the first exclusively from a German filmmaker.
Yeah.
And his motivations for wanting to make it and how he felt about it were absolutely, you know, key to what makes this film as good as it is. So that's me, Five Bloop. I'll end there.
Well, I'm gonna just say that, you know, it's a Five Bloop for me. I mean, look, I watched this late yesterday. It's a long film, 2.5 hours. I put it on at like 10:30 with the intention of in my head, I was like, I'm never gonna get through this. I'll have to watch the second bit the next day, which I hate doing.
Mm.
But I got to a point where I was like, I can't turn this off, because, like I said, I love modern history like you, John. It was one of my favourite subjects at school. I love reading about history. I love watching documentaries about history, especially Second World War history and events surrounding it. I'm just fascinated by it. But the Great War is... I know a decent amount, and I actively search out informational gaps that I'm missing, and stuff like this is very interesting to me because, like you said, it's from a German perspective. Now, that already piques my interest, because I don't think, off the top of my head, you see, it's a tough one because the First World War is obviously different context behind the war, but
yeah.
It feels like, you know, if we saw a German perspective of the Second World War, I think that would be like a bit more like, whoa, you know, that's really interesting.
Mm.
But when I saw these youngsters at the start of this film, and this is the thing that got me about it, it's like how excited they were, how like the propaganda at the time, like you think about the way information traveled during 1914 to 1918, it's all radio. A couple of, you know, moving picture things, but most of it's hearsay. You have no reference point of what's going on. So whatever your state or country is telling you, you're like, fucking, this sounds amazing. We're going to go to Paris. We're going to do all this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they fucking turn up and you're just like, trench warfare is, it's arguably some of the worst warfare that's ever been invented, like the most futile. You know, because...
Well, that's it, yeah.
It's literally, they fought for 4 years and made like 2 miles of exchanged land, which is fucking insane. I mean, it just blows your fucking mind. It's like, what the fuck? And 17 million people died in World War One.
Yeah, that shit belongs to us now. Well, okay.
Now, when you watch this film from the perspective of these young kids enrolling for what they think is a great and honourable cause, but they also just, you know, they've drunk the Kool-Aid that the fucking government's fed them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get there and you see this descent into just fucking brutal anarchy. And I've read a couple of reviews where they're like, oh, it's too much. I don't know much about war. I literally read a review where it was like, I know we know war is brutal, but was it that brutal? I was like, are you fucking serious? It's probably like 50 times worse.
Yeah.
Like, some of the stuff you see in this film, and especially for the first half, I thought they were quite tame. But by the second half, they're bringing out all of the shit that happened in the First World War.
Yeah.
You've got the introduction of tanks for the first time. You've got the flame units. You've got all this sort of stuff. And running across no man's land and people literally being fucking exploded into 1,000 pieces.
Mm.
And you can't sit there and go, it's not brutal enough. Or sorry, it's too brutal, sorry, this film. Because for me, it just highlights... Could you imagine just the fear of these kids and what they had to go through? And not just the kids, but the older people as well, conscripted, and it's just mind-blowing. And whenever I watch something like this, like you said, with 1917, if it's on, I'd watch it again, but I would never go, all right, lads, come over, let's fucking whack on, All Quiet on the Western Front. Fucking, we'd just be so depressed.
Mm.
But that doesn't stop it from being a masterfully created piece of cinema. Now, arguably, it drags in a few places, but you need those quiet, reflective moments because it wasn't, obviously...
Well, clues in the title.
But it's just such an eye-opening film, especially if you don't really understand much about the Great War, and to see it from that German perspective, I thought was very interesting. But there's moments in it where you're like, just why are they doing this? We'll talk about the general and stuff. We'll talk about the peacemakers. We'll talk about the kids, and we'll get into that in a minute. But I just wanted to say, I thought it was a fantastic film. I couldn't take my eyes off of it. It depressed me. I'd had bad dreams because of it. And that's good that it makes people think, and I hope people do a bit more research about our history and the terrible wars that we are doomed to repeat, it seems, John. Doomed to repeat.
Yes.
Sad.
Yeah.
Well, I'll just do a little quick advert here, all right, listeners, just so you know. We've finished House of the Dragon, and if you listen to this, you can tell it's a regular film review. Now, we review loads of different films. We're also going to review some other HBO shows in the future, like Last of Us, which is now got a release date of January 15th, I think. So look out for that podcast. That will be going live in the next few weeks with hopefully a preview of some sort, which we are going to sort out. We've got 60 Minutes to Midnight coming back next week.
Yeah.
Gaz and John meet up probably once a month to discuss what we've been watching and what you should be watching. We also discuss things like what's overrated, what's underrated, and probably be some more Pokemon chat in there because why not?
Overrated.
Be a podcast about it.
Underrated Ash Ketchum.
Pokemon. Yeah, yeah, good. Pikachu. Yeah, don't underrate him. Wow. He'll fuck you up.
Yeah.
Pika P. No, that was Bale as Pikachu again. Sorry. But yeah, that's all I want to say. Just like, subscribe, share the podcast, and stick around for all the awesome content we have coming. And if you want to give us more money, go to patreon.com/fancritical. And on there, you can become a member of the fellowship of Fan Critical. And basically, that just means we get some money to help us run stuff, doesn't it, John? Really?
Yeah.
Basically. Which is nice. And it's lovely, and we thank all our Patreons.
Not even used this hoverboard yet.
Support. Yeah, have you not used it yet? Oh, fuck. Yeah, we'll talk about that after, but yeah, well, I want to see that. I want to see that.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Should we jump into the plot of this film, John? Now, I don't think we should do the whole plot. I think we should
definitely not
talk about our highlights because it's a long film. Should we talk about the boys, the youngsters that sign up to fight on the front? Mm. What are your thoughts on the four main characters?
Given the limited screen time of them as a four, being just kids, I bought in. Maybe it's the foreign language thing. I don't know, because sometimes you can pick up on, you know, if they're all speaking English and it's like, hey, broski, how's and you're just like, oh, fucking hell, some of this shit. But they genuinely seem like they had good chemistry. I like them immediately.
Yeah.
I liked actually the contrast right at the beginning. Obviously, you've got this Heinrich, who poor fellow, he's going through the mill. And then obviously he dies, and then they switch over to the kids about to go to school or whatever. But it's that, like, it's the shot of the four of them all in like nice prim uniform. They're in a street that is like no litter. It is like the cleanest shot. They look like they're living in like a theme park or something. That contrast between that and this gutter trench warfare, I felt was fairly deliberate. And then obviously you see them get swept up in the nationalistic, like, bullshit propaganda that gets fed to them. And it's, you know, it's fairly, you know, straight off the bat, I'm looking at them going, right, okay, all four of these guys are dying. Maybe one will make it out.
It's I really like the chemistry between them. Like I said, obviously watch it in German and not the, because the first couple of lines of dialogue when it was dubbed, I was like, oh my God, what the fuck is going on here? Then luckily I put it to the German and it all felt right. Mm. I say love, it's a strong word to use, with this sort of context, that they start with Heinrich, this kid, and it shows you. And this is a thing that I don't think people really realize about First World War, Second World War, these mass conflicts. Just how regurgitated everything is, and how you know, they use the boots again, they use the uniform again, they use the gun again, they use the ammunition they find on the ground. They are stripping these soldiers. Literally, as soon as you're dead, they take your stuff off, and it's just seeing that coat and his sort of uniform go through that transition and then be given to Paul, I thought was a stunning sort of start that highlighted something that you don't really see, or most people wouldn't really know. Do you know what I mean? That people are just fucking ripping all the belongings off these people, shipping them back, cleaning them up, and then these poor kids who have been spoon fed these lies. You know, they're losing 40,000 soldiers a week. You know, they don't come from nowhere, these soldiers. You get 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds, people signing that they're older than they actually are, which I kind of got the impression these kids have done.
Well, he fakes his parents' signature, doesn't he?
That's right, the conscription papers. So to see that journey, I thought was, you know, and it sort of bookended at the end of the film with the sort of scarf again. So it's just this idea of these things being passed on to the next generation of soldiers.
Yeah.
And you'd think that would be years, but it's not. It's a week. You know what I mean? It's fucking, it's a churn. You're stuck in the churn of just death. And I thought that was really powerful. And, you know, I thought, you know, poor, is it Ludwig? He goes first, doesn't he? Get the glasses, kid.
Is that what his name is, Ludwig?
I think so.
I just stand him down as Specs.
Yeah, Ludwig Behm is his name, if you want his surname.
Oh, yeah.
He was terrified, bless him. He did not know what he was getting for at all. Fucking hell. It was just like, you're dead. And then, obviously, you know, war makes people, obviously. And Paul, Franz, and Albert, sort of under the stewardship of this, you know, cat who's a bit more of a veteran soldier. Mm. They sort of stick around for 18 months, John. They survive on the front lines, which is kind of remarkable. That's not to say they're in the trenches the whole time, because they actually have a sort of base camp about 2 kilometres away from the trenches, that they get some R&R and then they go back and they get some R&R, just like a lot of soldiers did back then.
Yeah.
But surviving 18 months, that makes
actually. Yeah, well, funnily enough, so in the novel, so one kind of, I say critique of the film, or of this film, is that in the novel, they go in like 1915 or something. And the
4 years.
Yeah. And the reason they go earlier is that is the idea that by 1917, the propaganda, the blind nationalism, certainly with the youth, was not as like clear cut, because things like the Battle of the Somme had happened, and it was obvious that there were like thousands and thousands of people dying, and everyone was a little bit like, "Oh, what's going on here? So I've heard that as a slight criticism. I don't think it hurts the narrative, and to be honest, slightly more, you know, believable that that they would last 18 months rather than, you know, close to 4 years or 3 years.
I would be interested to know how many soldiers lasted 3 to 4 years. It would not be many. And I think there's several reasons for that. One, if you're wounded, you're taken off the front lines. Two, you know, I don't think, like I talked about R&R, like, I don't think they'd let you serve 4 years. Do you know what I mean? I just can't see it.
Yeah, I don't know what the, of course, it's, look, the book is fiction written by someone that was in the trenches in World War One. So it's not.
Yeah.
So it's the set pieces are accounts and recreations of events rather than a specific, it's not a biography, for example.
Mm. So what I thought was interesting about the film is it sets up them going to the front lines, and then 18 months later, you're a couple of days before the 11th of November, and 11-11, you know, the armistice. And it's this crazy...
Well, a week before his birthday as well.
Yeah, it's this crazy sequence where you've got German Democrats trying to pursue peace with French, English and Americans. And then you've also got this tyrannical military leader who's pushing for as much bloodshed and carnage as possible because he believes that's the only thing that has honor. So you've got some of the most intense fighting on the front lines moments before the armistice.
Yeah.
And it's this journey of these boys during this, you know, final push to try and, you know, not in their eyes, but get some honor for the Germans or whatever. And it's just brilliant. Like, I mean, brilliant in a horrible way. It's the second half of the film, basically. I thought it really ratcheted up and took it to a level that I didn't see it really going there in the first half. I was like, oh, this is meandering a bit. And then it went fucking mental, you know?
I don't mind the those parts. The film begins rather bizarrely with an incredible shot of the what looked like fjords, but obviously they're not in Scandinavia or whatever. But that shot of the trees, and then you've got the fox and the cubs and stuff, that kind of that quiet before the storm, and that's kind of littered throughout the film, where there's I guess when I was watching it, every time there was nothing happening, as a viewer I'm sitting there waiting for something to happen
on edge.
And I like that, because I'd imagine that's exactly what it felt like as a soldier. In those moments, you kind of get you get to that point with them where they're obviously sitting there, they steal a goose from a farmer and stuff, and they're sitting there having a bit of banter, and you can see that they're so like battle worn that they actually just get comfortable with it, and they do find times to what's the word I'm looking for? Not whatever the word is. Like they find time to just go, do you know what? You know, it is what it is.
Let's be normal. Yeah. Let's have a chat and let's reminisce, and eat food.
Banter
on the front lines. Mm. I like the quiet moments. So arguably more than some of the battle moments, but it's because they produce that tension. But once it, you know, once they make the attack on the trenches, and then you're kind of sitting there thinking, oh, that was, you know, that, yeah, they've taken the trench. And then you see the tanks come in, you're like, oh, fucking hell.
But that,
like,
see, yeah, that, I mean, that shot is, I mean, it's incredible. Even like the look of the tanks as well, it's like fairly spot on.
Yeah, it's authentic. Yeah. It's authentic, yeah, totally.
That bit where the tank's rolling over the trench, as I think it's,
oh my God,
Albert, where he's lying there screaming. That looks terrifying. The weight of the tank pushing down on the mud of the trench, it looks like the whole thing is going to collapse.
Well, it just rolls over someone at some point. I was like, Jesus Christ.
That must have felt like, you know, you're a 17, 18-year-old kid at this point. It must have felt like fighting in some sort of, like, alien warfare. You know, World War One was the first, tank-based. Yeah. And particularly from the German side, little history lesson for you there. The Germans didn't have, manufacturing tanks. They were reactive to it after seeing them in battle used by the British and the French. So imagine being a kid that's never even heard of a tank, and you see this big fucking, you know, metal robot just coming towards you, crushing everything that's just invincible. Must have been.
Well, you see them just shooting
terrifying. These
bullets,
yeah,
just pointlessly. Yeah. They're just fucking unloading thousands of bullets against these tanks. Like, guys, come, what the fuck are you doing? This is just run for your fucking lives. Poor Albert gets fucking flamethrower to death. That's a bad way to go.
That is really bad. And that kind of, he's so short from the water as well. I mean, it wouldn't have done any good anyway, but it's like,
no,
yeah,
fuck no. But he's also like, it's the brutality of war. And, you know, he like surrenders. He's like, you know, please, I surrender. No, unfortunately, there was not many prisoners taken at that time.
Well,
it's fucking hell. Like, just absolutely brutal. So poor Albert gets it. Franz disappears. You never see him again. The token that he carries around is this scarf of this girl that he got with during one of their R&R sessions. And that scarf becomes quite important later on. But it's interesting, the film sort of goes away. I thought this was really interesting. The film goes away from a relationship between the four boys and goes into a relationship between Paul and Kat, like their sort of dynamic, which I really liked. It was like, you know, this sort of, they seem like best mates.
Yeah.
And that was the dynamic in the film that really had me hooked.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Well, I really like Kat. Obviously, you like Kat. Everyone likes Kat. He's a fucking legend.
He's a great character. And he's obviously a little bit older. And he talks about being a, you know, from a kid's perspective, if you're with this guy and it's like he's a veteran, I mean, he's got a tash, so he must be a veteran. He's been there a while.
Yeah.
He's got a wife.
He's 21 or something.
Yeah. He's got a wife and a child who we find out has died.
Yeah, that was tough.
But then, you know, there's that, the reality of war is he's not a professional killing machine. He's a cobbler that can't read. So it's like, yeah, it's so grim. But that was the reality at the time. In terms of him as a character, he's brilliant. I think very difficult to watch this film and not look at him as like you know, okay, I mean, Paul does a cracking job, but, you know, Kat is probably most people's favourite character if they watch this film.
And, you know, they survive that sort of retreat. They get back to base. The armistice is on the brink of being, you know, signed on the evening of the 10th of November. And they agree that the armistice will take place on the 11th hour of the 11th day. Obviously, the German soldiers sort of rejoice. Everyone rejoices because they're like, thank fuck for that. Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
can
they
we
must
just
be
go
hanging
home?
The next day.
Oh, my God. Yeah. But, and this is the kind of thing that always gets me in these sorts of stories is the innocuousness of some ways that you can die during war. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it happened in Band of Brothers, like, and these are true stories in Band of Brothers, you know, they're basically recounting stories of how some of these people died when, like, victory had already been achieved. Do you know what I mean? People just dying at fucking base and stuff. You're like, oh my God, you've survived through, like, 2 years of hell, and then you just died to the most, like, a car accident and something like that. You're like, what the fuck? And the way that Kat goes, I was like, oh, fucking stop stealing from this fucking farmer. You know what I mean? Can you stop doing that, please?
Yeah.
And they act like they can just do it. And it really annoyed me. It was like, look, these guys will fucking shoot you. You're an invader on their fucking land. Like, stop doing it.
But once he was shot in the gut.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a bad shot. But that is, you think about how they would ever go back to normal society after that. And, you know, let's be honest, going back to a Germany that was about to go into the Great Depression anyway, I mean, it's like, well, fucking hell. You're only going to end up either fighting again in a war at an older age. So, look, probably better off just going in France.
Yeah. I mean, it was sad because the whole way through the film, I was sat there going, one of the guys has to make it through the film. Like, I just felt like it was going to be Kat. And then when he died, I was like, oh, fuck's sake. And then I was like, oh, it's okay. Paul's going to make it through, you know? I was like, you know, Paul's going to make it through. But then obviously the mad general decides that until the 11th, how, you know, 11 o'clock, until that point, even if there's 15 minutes left, we're going to go and fucking storm that trench and we're going to get a great one last victory in.
We've all had managers and, like that.
Oh my God. Like, I imagine you're, that's like you, John.
Five
that's
on
what
a Friday,
I imagine you're
like. Come on.
Oh man. Could you imagine, like, you've just been told you're going home. And then he's like, nah, 20 minutes left. Go on. And
yeah,
well, if
you
don't do it, you get shot.
Or... Yeah.
Yeah. And, man, I just... The way that Paul dies, man, like, just... I was so annoyed. It really annoyed me. But it was just, once again, one of those things where it's just kind of like, yeah, that's about right. You can just go anyway. Do you know what I mean? Like... moments before, literally probably 30 seconds before the fucking 11 o'clock ceasefire. And what's mad about it is that is, you know, what happened. They were fucking just at each other's throats, killing each other. Like, literally, you'd be drowning someone in the mud and then they'd be like, that's 11 o'clock, done. That's fucking bonkers.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? That is absolutely mad.
Yeah, I mean, there was no mad general asking people to storm over the thing just at quarter, 15 minutes or quarter to 11. That didn't happen. But,
no.
But look, I mean, but you know, World War One was famously the war where they just, you know, stopped fighting at Christmas and play football. So it's like...
Yeah.
That's the thing. That's that, like...
Soccer.
Yeah.
Soccer.
Yeah, they didn't go, well, let's play football and start putting on some NFL gear. Like, that's, you know, that would be madness.
Blue 63, red 65.
yeah, So there's a couple of things that we've not covered, but I just want to get your opinion on. So so Jaden.
Go on.
So with the silent T. He
to Jaden, yeah.
Yeah, he takes his own life with a fork. How brutal was that?
Yep, hated it. I hated it because it was just like, just depressing again. This is what I'm talking about. I was just sitting there going, come on, man. You've been through all this shit. I know you've got a fucked up eye, your vision's fucked, your leg's fucked. I was like, but you could live. You're going to live, bro.
No, but it's not living to him, though, is it? He's like, I'm.
I know, but it's just depressing, John. I was sitting there. Yeah, so it was very good. There's a moment in the film, but it hurt my soul.
What about the guy that then like just takes his soup? Doesn't even ask.
Well, I tell you what.
They should have shot him, honestly.
If I was Paul, I thought he was. I thought he should get up and just strangle him. Fucking beat him to a pulp. Because I was annoyed about that. Okay?
Yeah.
So don't you ever steal my soup, John. Because you know what'll happen to you now.
Yeah. No, look, I'd imagine in that situation, I'm Kat. To be honest, you would probably be Jaden. You'd be the one lying there going, oh, I can't live like this.
I'd fork myself to death.
Yeah, because Gaz would have to be Paul, wouldn't he?
Oh, my God. Are you telling me Gaz is making it? Are you telling me Gaz is making it through a war?
Very nippy. He's very quick. He's very quick.
He's not anymore, John. He's lost so much pace.
No, but back in 1918...
He's, you know, Gaz, bless him, little Sir Gareth, trusty Squire Gareth, is picked up so many injuries now that he's a shambles of a human being.
Maybe he's Jaden.
I call
then.
Him Paperboy.
He's like, can only run 7 second 100 meters. That's still pretty quick, mate. Why have you killed yourself? What have you done?
Don't kill yourself. Yeah. Come on.
Yeah, Lucy gobbling up the soup. No, look, you know, technically that's ours. Me and Len were going to half that.
Emma just watching.
So, so that's brutal. We've also not mentioned a little bit of A-lister sprinkled on this film, Daniel Brühl.
Yeah. I thought he was underused. When you get someone of that or like screen presence. I felt like he was in probably four scenes, the negotiation scenes. I felt he would have been better served on the front lines as a potential soldier, companion, whatever. He could have played Jaden or he could have played Kat. I mean, Kat was fantastic. I'm not saying that, but you're fucking Daniel Brühl there. Come on.
Like, yeah, but so the guy that he's playing is, you know, he's massive in terms of that signing of the armistice that then obviously 8 or 9 months later, I forget, is the Treaty of Versailles. So I get that they wanted a big actor in that role. But no, I agree. It might have been a choice to not use him too much because it's better to not have, like, I mean, look, they might be fairly famous faces in German TV and film, but obviously to us it's they're not, right?
Yep. They're not. Yeah. I'll tell you one thing I would like to bring up just before we move on to a little bit of feedback actually, John. Is I thought the film did an excellent job contrasting the life of the soldier versus the generals and the people doing the negotiations. You know, they're scoffing their faces with the most unbelievable looking charcuterie boards and fucking like fruit. And, you know, the general who's an absolute fucking prick is throwing his steak to the dog and shit like that. And the Great Dane. And I was like, oh, Great Dane.
Yep.
I've got a Great Dane, obviously. I do not throw my Great Dane steak.
no,
she does get
up.
Some, though. I do chop it up for her a little bit. But I thought he did a fantastic job just contrasting the people making the decisions and the actual people on the front lines and how they didn't give a fuck. Do you know what I mean? I just thought that was beautifully told throughout the film. It kept happening.
They are pawns on a chessboard. And it's like, if you lose the game, then so what? You just play another game. There's more pieces. That is the pointlessness of war, And anyone that's listening, that's thinking about going to fight for a cause, you know, don't actually just, you know, stay at home, you know, do a bit of gardening or something, you know,
listen to more of our podcasts,
listen to more of our gardening. Podcasts actually. So, you know,
yeah.
Safer.
That's it's much safer. Although you will be offended at certain times, probably by you, John, or something. So yeah. In a way, there is offence happening.
Well, but if you're offended enough to go, right, I'm switching this podcast off and going to fight in a war, then more fool you.
Yeah. I think we'll wrap up the discussion on the plot there. I mean, look, we could talk hours about it because it's a long film and the intricacies and the historical references and stuff. But I just think it was a fantastic, horrible, brutal journey for 2.5 hours that left me contemplating how lucky I am to live at the time I do now. And although the world is, you know, quite a depressing place at the moment, I do believe that we're in a much better state as human beings.
Oh, yeah.
Than, you know what I mean? Like, the opportunities are there for people now, and just some of the stuff these guys had to live through. I mean, fuck. It just makes you think, right? Just makes you think.
Yeah. And we've not covered it as a scene, and it's kind of, for me, like, well actually there's two things. The first thing I'll cover very quickly, that last shot of him after he gets stabbed with the bayonet and he's lying there, and you've got the silhouette of him contrast with the staircase and the light coming in. I almost felt like,
loved it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a beautiful shot. And it felt like that could have been where they just left it, like him just like bleeding out in just a ditch, in a trench, where no one can even see it happening. But obviously they decide for him to then climb the stairs and then sit down and then die in the light. Fine. I guess the scene that sticks with me the most is the one where, you know, he stabs the French soldier. And then he's bleeding out. He's coughing up blood. He then stuffs his mouth with, like, mud to silence him.
Gross.
Sits there and just watches him. That the sound mixing there, it's
gargling. And the,
it's the best and the worst scene in the film. And I genuinely, I found it so difficult to watch. One of those where it's kind of like you just want the scene to end. I was kind of looking away at points, and you can still hear that gargling. He then obviously goes over gets a tissue out for some reason. It's like, this guy's dead, mate. You stabbed him about 7 times.
You've stabbed him.
And you tried to choke him on his own blood as well. That is brutal. And the other thing is, apparently in the novel, it's a little less. So obviously in the film, he takes his ID and says to the guy that he's going to go find his wife. And then later on, he loses that and he's like, right, okay, he feels gutted that he now can't do it. Apparently in the book, he just forgets about it straight away. He's like, he says he'll do it, but the reality is he knows he's never going to go and do it. Which is a little bit more cold
to make him feel better, to make himself feel better. He probably says that, you know what I mean? Fucking hell, you got to pump yourself up any way you can in these situations. Jesus. We had some feedback actually from one of our lovely Patreons, Beth.
Oh yeah.
Panico. One of our fantastic supporters, of course.
Yes.
At the Discio. She has said this, and she emailed this to us just before we decided we were going to cover this.
Oh, yeah.
She says, hi, Fan Critical people. Settle something for me. My husband says All Quiet on the Western Front is the greatest war movie ever. I think 1917 is better. However, if the intention was to show it for how horrific it is, mission accomplished. I now have PTSD from it. I still say, though, 1917 is the best. I want to know what you guys think. Don't let my blueberry overlord status influence your vote. She's written here in order, well, not in order, but some films that she thinks: Dunkirk, 1917, then potentially All Quiet on the Western Front, then Inglourious Bastards,
Then Home Alone 2,
then Home Alone 2, then Ghostbusters 2. No, What would you say, John, is your favourite ever war film?
I mean, I was going to say this at the beginning of the pod, actually. It's almost impossible because when you're scoring films, like, I'm sure there are war films that have been fairly tragic where I've given four bloobs and then I go back and go, hold on, didn't I give like Deadpool 2 four bloobs? I'm like, they're not comparable films.
They're not comparable.
Much like good documentaries and things like that, you kind of score them in a different way. I think, so Dunkirk, 1917, and All Quiet.
Inglourious Basterds Western, is the other one.
And Inglourious Basterds. Well, again, so I mean, Inglourious Basterds, I would say, is the weakest of the four.
Yeah. I wouldn't say it's a war film. I know it is a war film, but I would say it's not a war film. It's a Tarantino film. I don't know how to really put it in a genre. Yeah,
I mean, it's... I would say they're all five bloob. Inglourious Basterds probably isn't, actually. But depends what you're trying to achieve. Like when you watch a text like that, do you want to watch a film for pure enjoyment and, oh yeah, I'd recommend everyone watch that? I would say I'd recommend everyone watch all three of those. 1917, I think, gives me more of a
chill. It gives me more of a chill down my spine when I watch 1917.
Yes.
Like,
I think it has
a couple of moments in that film where I'm like, fucking, like, I'm so attached to the characters.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That I just love it. Dunkirk, being British, just makes me cry my eyes out every time at the end.
Yeah. It's doing its job, isn't it? You know.
Oh, fucking hell. And Nolan's way of telling the story from different perspectives there really works. And I really enjoy Dunkirk. I mean, a couple of that aren't on the list there. I mean, Saving Private Ryan is a film that I will watch over and over and over again. Like, it doesn't matter. You know, whenever that's on, I will watch that again. Fantastic performances. And obviously that is the production mind behind Band of Brothers. And if no one's watched Band of Brothers, and there's so many people that haven't watched Band of Brothers, it's basically Saving Private Ryan on HBO and has 10 episodes. And it's just incredible. And it's true documentation in a way. Obviously it's, you know, realized, but it's actually recounting actual stories and events. So if you haven't seen Band of Brothers, Beth, I implore you to go watch Band of Brothers.
Yes.
It is just beautiful. Beautiful and terrific. But there's some lovely character moments in that as well. Like, you get to spend so much time with some of the characters, and it really benefits from that, you know?
Mm. I would say even though I would give all three of those films a five bloob, If I was ever putting together like my top 10 like favorite films, I don't think I'd ever have war films in there.
No, tough one, isn't it?
I just think it's depends what you want to get out of it, but it's very tough to try and place them in terms of what's the number one. But I think they all serve a slightly different purpose. But I recommend it on two fronts. One, because it's about World War One, and quite a lot of, aside from 1917, quite a lot of the war films that are covered are about World War Two. Maybe because it's easier to paint that Nazi kind of war machine as this big evil. And it wasn't quite like that in World War One. I don't know is the answer. Beth, I'm sorry. It doesn't matter how many,
Beth,
you know, bloobs we dish out, and how much blueberry mastery you have via Patreon. I can't give you an answer there.
Yeah. Well, sorry, Beth, but I hope we've given you some suggestions that weren't on your list. Like I said, check out Band of Brothers. It's incredible. Right, John, let's wrap it up. Let's wrap it up there. Because we've had a good little discussion on it. It's good to be back podcasting. And I'm going to see you next week anyway, mate. Because we're doing 60 Minutes to Midnight, baby.
Yes. Can you go and get yourself a new bottle of scotch? John, German bottle, maybe.
I'm still on a fitness challenge for 2 more weeks.
Oh, you're not allowed to.
I'm not allowed.
You can't have a glass of booze. Scotch.
I haven't drunk booze in 7 weeks.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm fucking smashing it, bro. And I
well,
can
you're not smashing
deliver.
It.
Well, yeah, I can deliver still very good analysis of what I've been watching.
Well, not based
whiskey.
On that last
However,
sentence.
I do
Jesus.
Agree. Yeah, I do agree. Whiskey does help.
Yeah, just a glass of scotch.
We'll see how we go.
We'll see how we go.
Yeah. All right, mate.
All right, mate.
Thank you for that. Very insightful, very deep from you for a change, which concerns me.
Well,
something happened.
Nothing's
very
happened.
Deep.
It's just people think I'm negative when I talk about, you know, House of the Dragon not being as good as I wanted it to be and blah, blah, blah. But no, it's because I expect a little bit more. And when something like this comes up, a German film, a German perspective of German events, I'm respectful of that approach. And, as I've said before, you know, history is written by the victors. Sometimes it's nice to see that there are humans on the other side. So when I see something that resonates with me, I'm like, yeah, do you know what? Brilliant. So I respect the context of the film by coming prepared to talk from the heart.
Well said, Bronze John. Well said. And thank you, dear listeners, for listening to us discuss this depressing film. But we hope we gave it a bit of levity and also gave you some lovely critical analysis too. All right, John. I'll catch you next week, mate. And I'll catch you next week too, dear listener.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye.